Chapter 14. The History of Wicca. Part 3. So far, we have seen that the definition of Wicca is witchcraft, and it's all over the world. The only protection from it is for Christians alone, through the power of Jesus Christ. Through our look at the history, we found out that Wicca witchcraft is nothing new, even though they pitch it as nature lovers appreciating the outdoors. Instead, it is the same old rebellious occult behavior that's been going on ever since the Tower of Babel. From Wicca witchcraft's origins, we saw it spread across the world to Egypt, Greece, Rome, Asia, India, and the nearby island countries, Africa, Latin America, and Europe. Europe is where the Wicca version of witchcraft was birthed, after which it came here to the Americas. But all they did was change the name of old-fashioned European witchcraft. How did that name change cause so many to fall for it, even here in the US? Well, it was through the efforts of a couple of people in Europe, starting with the grandmother of Wicca, Margaret Murray, and then the grandfather of Wicca, Gerald Gardner. The latter founded Gardnerian Wicca. In the last chapter we saw the mother of Wicca, Doreen Valiente, was promoted by Europe's media, becoming popular with the British people at a time after England's ban against witchcraft was lifted in 1951. Valiente wrote a lot of books and even exhibited her witchcraft tools. Her biggest effort that resulted in a huge increase for European Wicca was her revamping of Gardner's Book of Shadows, which is a pivotal witchcraft manual that she made more palatable for public consumption. In fact, she was such a big influence that it has been said Wicca may never have really gotten off the ground without her contribution. From those people, Wicca spread to America through Raymond Buckland on the East Coast, Long Island, the father of American Wicca, who worked with his wife to Americanize Wicca into what he called Sax Wicca. Buckland wrote many books, including his own witchcraft dogma book like Gardner's Book of Shadows. His is known as the Big Blue Book or the Complete Book of Witchcraft. The other who brought European Wicca witchcraft to America was a lady that showed up on the West Coast, Los Angeles. Her name was Sybil Leek, and she came from a family of witches in Europe. Leek was made into a celebrity by the American media and influenced a lot of other popular and powerful people, just as her family had back in Europe. She really helped popularize Wicca, especially through the many books she wrote. Diary of a Witch was the breakout book for this lady, who traveled around with a live crow, Mr. Hotfoot Jackson, on her shoulder. Just as Leek became a celebrity who then influenced other celebs toward witchcraft, we see the same today with examples like Tom Brady, the many-time Super Bowl champion, being influenced into witchcraft rituals through his wife, who admits to being a witch. Then we ask the question of whether the Democrat Party here in the US has been taken over by the occult. Over recent years, people have joked that it should be called the Democrat Party. Based on what we saw in the last chapter with the massive occult infiltration of that party, that label is probably more accurate than people realize. The Democrat Party is being taken over by the occult, and the evidence includes their latest movements with the riots and BLM, Black Lives Matter. In fact, we saw all of that is being run by witches. It sounds crazy, but we saw the evidence. Now, we want to take a look at where Wicca went from that point, on up to our modern day. The next big step was through Alex Sanders. Sanders came up with what is called Alexandrian Wicca. Again, we're going to see that there are a lot of Wicca branches. You could also call those branches denominations, but I use the term lightly because it's really our Christian term. As a new Christian, we would set out to find a church, and that normally involves deciding on a denomination. There are so many. Well, if we use that term very loosely for Wicca, that is really what's going on with those seeking a method and group in witchcraft. Even with the branch of witchcraft called Wicca, there is not just one clear way of practicing. If someone wants to make the unfortunate choice to become a witch and follow Wicca, the next decision is which denomination, or branch. Do you follow the path of a traditional witch, the Gardnerian route, an eclectic witch, or something like the guy we are going to look at here with his Alexandrian witchcraft or Alexandrian Wicca? Alex Sanders was the self-proclaimed king of the witches. So, now we've seen Wicca's grandmother, Murray, grandfather, Gardner, mother, Valiente, father, Buckland, celebrity, Leek, and king, Sanders. But before we get further into what Sanders did, let me ask you a question. Do you think I'm having any trouble finding enough Bible verses for each chapter that tell us to stay away from witchcraft and other occult practices? No. We are not even getting close to exhausting them yet. That is why we're studying this. The warning against this evil are all over the Bible, and, as Christians, we are supposed to study all of it, not just some. Our warning for this chapter is in 2 Chronicles 33. We're going to take a look at the unfortunate history about a certain king of Judah. As you probably know, 1 and 2 Kings, as well as 1 and 2 Chronicles, record the true account of different kings and kingdoms. There was the northern kingdom that split off from the southern kingdom with 10 tribes in the north and 2 tribes down south. Some were good kings, but a lot were bad, including most of the northern kings. The southern kings had more honorable ones, but they too went downhill and eventually both of them went into captivity. So, the record of the rulers is in those Bible books, and we are going to read about a real king back in that day. Imagine if this was you and your life was talked about for the whole world to hear, century after century after century. And his true life story is not virtuous. But notice why God has strong words for him. You know, we always hope people would write a favorable report or glowing eulogy about how we were some sort of wise and benevolent credit to humanity. That does not happen for this guy. The report comes from God about what evil and detestable practices he was involved with right out the gate after becoming king. From there, it continues straight downhill. Here is 2 Chronicles 33:1-6.
Manasseh was 12 years old when he became king, and he reigned in Jerusalem 55 years. He did evil in the eyes of the Lord, following the detestable practices.
So, what Manasseh was doing was detestably evil in the eyes of the Lord. Wow, what was he getting involved with that caused God to use such strong words?
He did evil in the eyes of the Lord, following the detestable practices of the nations the Lord had driven out before the Israelites. He rebuilt the high places his father, Hezekiah, had demolished.
Of course, Hezekiah was a good king, but something didn't transfer to Manasseh in that next generation. The high places God talks about are where they went and worshipped the false gods. Hezekiah did the right thing in tearing those down to get rid of them, but then his own son came along and rebuilt it all. Oops. There is mistake number one.
He rebuilt the high places his father, Hezekiah, had demolished. He also erected altars to the Baals and made Asherah poles.
Scripture tells us that, behind every idol is a demon. So, this involves demonic practices, including false worship and idols. It gets even worse.
He bowed down to all the starry hosts and worshipped them.
How about those Christians, who are into astrology? Does it sound like God's okay with that? No. As we have seen, astrology is a cult practice. And listen to what Manasseh not only did outside, but then had the nerve to bring into this place.
He built altars in the temple of the Lord.
That is kind of like what we saw with so-called Christian witches. What are they doing right now, today? It is the same attempt at merging occult practices with Christianity. But you cannot do that. It is profane.
In both courts of the temple of the Lord, he built altars to all the starry hosts. He sacrificed his sons in the fire in the valley of Ben-Hinnom, Gehenna.
And then he killed his own sons in these occult practices. Does that go on today? Yes, we saw that and it's unfortunate, but it still happens. Gehenna was the section of Jerusalem that was a dumping ground for all manner of trash, so it continually burned. In the New Testament, Jesus uses that place as an example when he is asked what hell is like. He tells them it's like Gehenna, where the worms that eat them do not die, and the fire is not quenched.
He practiced sorcery, divination, and witchcraft, sought omens, and he consulted mediums and psychics. He did much evil in the eyes of the Lord, provoking him to anger.
If you are going to be in a position of power, would you say that's not the epitaph or eulogy you'd be wanting, especially since it's coming from God? I think it is pretty obvious. Here's the thing, in his character, God is the same yesterday, today, and forever. So, if he considered it detestably evil then, no matter what spin man wants to put on it through the media or whatever, how does God feel today about people involved in sorcery, divination, consulting mediums, spiritists, and witchcraft, Wicca? It is still detestable to him. It is an evil thing in his eyes today, just as it was back then. Now, let's again take a look at why people, even here in America, are still increasingly getting involved in this detestable practice called witchcraft that has been relabeled as Wicca. Well, again, this guy's legacy will include the major advancement of what God considers detestable evil. As mentioned, Alex Sanders came up with the Alexandrian tradition, and I want to give you this quick video transcript to break down some of the many, many branches of Wicca. Sanders and his wife started their own coven, group of witches, and then proceeded to put their own spin on witchcraft with his Alexandrian Wicca.
Traditional witch. A traditional witch practices from a historical perspective in following the old craft that came before the modern adaptation of Wicca. Many traditional witches study their ancestry and the folklore attached to it. They want to honor the old ways of worshipping and most often choose a pantheon that aligns with their cultural backgrounds. Gardnerian witch. The father of Wicca, Gerald Gardner, developed this practice in Britain during the mid-20th century. From his original coven, Bricket Wood, he passed on his interpretation of witchcraft. As an initiation tradition, only another Gardnerian coven can bring in a new practitioner. This is done in order to trace the lineage of practitioners back to the very first coven. In this practice, covens have 13 members and are led by a high priestess and priest. The Gardnerians adhere to the story of the horned god dying and being reborn each year as the mother goddess remains eternally alive. Their rituals are highly elaborate, and many of the orthodox covens still practice ritual nudity. Gardnerian covens are quite secretive, so it can be a bit difficult to figure out as a new practitioner. Alexandrian witch. Alex and Maxine Sanders created the Alexandrian tradition as an offshoot of Gardner's practice. While the two practices are similar in many ways, they are on very different paths. Alexandrian witches are initiated and organized around a high priestess. The Alexandrian tradition focuses on the ancient archetypes of the Oak and Holly kings who battle and win, then battle and lose to bring out the light and dark, warmth and cold. While not as secretive as their Gardnerian counterparts, Alexandrian witches still place emphasis on tradition and following protocol.
So, again, these branches or denominations of Wicca are just spin-offs from the same old witchcraft practices. There are a lot of similarities between them and a few unique aspects. Different groups focus more than others on particular rituals and hierarchical structures versus more of a freewheeling organization. Some of the Gardnerian witches have said that Sanders created his Alexandrian Wicca when he refused initiation into a Gardnerian coven. From there he got a copy of Gardner's Book of Shadows and basically went off to start his own version. Here is more about Sanders.
A gifted psychic with a flamboyant style, he was for years the most public witch in Britain, gaining headlines for his reputed sensational acts of magic. Sanders was born in Manchester, the oldest of six children. His father was a music hall entertainer and suffered from alcoholism. By Sanders' own account, he was seven when he discovered his grandmother, Mary Bibby, standing naked in the kitchen in the middle of a circle drawn on the floor.
Imagine being a seven-year-old kid and walking into the kitchen to find your grandmother is naked, most likely sitting on a pentagram in a witch circle and doing some ritual stuff. Now, that is bad enough, but listen to this explanation that she came up with when her young grandson caught her being strange and naked in the middle of the floor.
She revealed herself as a hereditary witch and initiated him on the spot. She ordered him to enter the circle, take off his clothes and bend down with his head between his thighs. She took a knife and nicked his male body part, saying, "You are one of us now."
His own grandmother did that to him. Wow.
According to Sanders, Mary Bibby gave him her Book of Shadows, which he copied, and taught him the rites and magic of witches. He discovered his own natural psychic gifts for clairvoyance and healing by touch.
So, he felt he had special powers to heal people. I'll give you some examples in a little bit, but I want to answer this question: can witches, Satanists, sorcerers, and other people involved in the occult actually do healings? Well, let's take a look at that. To use a good analogy, God does miracles, and Satan has power, but only so far as performing some magic. Satan's power is not like God's, but what he does have he uses to deceive people. Let's take a more detailed look at that.
You will be hard-pressed to find someone who has never heard of some kind of religious miracle. Many Catholics are convinced of the validity of various sightings of the Virgin Mary around the world, stigmata, people's palms appearing to have blood on them like they have been pierced as Jesus was, weeping or bleeding statues, and even incorruptible bodies, corpses that undergo little, no, or delayed decomposition.
In our final countdown study, we mentioned a story about how people were flocking to one of those supposedly bleeding statues. But then a local guy said he guessed it was probably bird droppings because they like to eat from a large nearby tomato patch. That was so funny. Besides Catholicism, which is not biblical Christianity, other religions have seen the same sorts of experiences.
There are reported miracles in other religions as well. Hinduism, Buddhism, and Islam all claim to have documented miracles.
And it is the same in witchcraft. Witches recruit by claiming to have powers and even being able to heal. But is that really going on? We dealt with this in our Hinduism studies with a guy that could make holy ash appear on his hands, which just looked to me like dirty hands. He also did sleight of hand to appear as though he made little trinkets appear. That is the kind of thing that goes on. We also know that, over time, the body will often heal itself from many issues. Here is more on demonic and satanic miracles.
Satan has the power to perform miracles. While his power is limited, he can and does perform miracles in order to deceive. John 8:44 says that Satan is a liar and the father of lies. Satan can make himself appear as an angel of light, 2 Corinthians 11:14. He does this to draw people away from God.
When Catholics and others go to see an apparition of Mary, does that draw them closer to God? No, it endears them to Mary, which is an experience outside the scripture, instead of one with God. Someone might find a weeping or bleeding statue and then start throwing money at its feet or praying to it, but is that drawing them to God? No. In Hinduism and Buddhism you have these guru guys that can supposedly perform healings and make candy appear. But is that drawing them closer to God? No. In our earlier look at Egyptian witchcraft, we saw this.
When Moses and Aaron confronted Pharaoh, they performed a miraculous sign to confirm their message from God, Exodus 7:8-10. The Magi of Egypt were able to perform the same miracle by their secret arts, verse 11. God's miracle was shown to be greater, verse 12, but the fact is that the Magi were able to perform a satanic miracle in the king's court.
God's snake ate the snakes from Pharaoh's witches, thereby sending the message that those occultists have no power compared to God. And after that miracle, Pharaoh's witches could not replicate any of the other miracles God performed with the judgments in Egypt. So, what's the point? Again, yes, they did have power to do some things that could deceive people just as witches contacting demons might also be able to pull off today. In fact, I believe this is why Revelation 9 tells us that people in the 7-year tribulation will not stop worshipping demons and practicing their pharmakia, drugs, sorcery, witchcraft, and other occult behavior. It is not surprising that witchcraft is on the rise today because that's going to be part of the 7-year tribulation with the Antichrist tapping into that occult community. Those looking for signs and wonders, which is even big with the charismatic movement inside the church, are going to be duped.
During the tribulation, the Antichrist will use all sorts of displays of power through signs and wonders that serve the lie, 2 Thessalonians 2:9. These miracles are explicitly said to be empowered by Satan. Jesus warned that the end times will be characterized by the treachery of counterfeit prophets who will appear and perform great signs and wonders to deceive, Matthew 24:24.
The Bible tells us how to handle people that point to something and say, "Wow, that's an incredible miracle." We are to quote 1 John 4:1, which says,
"Dear friends, do not believe every spirit, but test the spirits to see whether they are from God, because many false prophets have gone out into the world."
And if we have any doubt, we are to go back to the scripture to see whether it lines up with the Bible and points people toward God and Jesus. And that cannot be only somewhat, it must be 100%. I want to bring that up because this little bit of power, including supposed healings through witchcraft techniques, is how people have been seduced into the occult. That evidence of some supernatural power does not mean it's from God. Here is some of what Sanders said he could do.
Sanders reportedly got rid of warts by wishing them on someone else, someone who's already ugly, with boil marks I can fill up with the warts. He claimed to cure a man of heroin addiction, and cure cystitis in a woman by laying his hands on her head, and willing her affliction away. He also said he cured a young woman of stomach cancer, by sitting with her in the hospital for 3 days and nights, holding her feet, and pouring healing energy into her. He effected other cures by pointing at the troubled spots on the body, and concentrating. Pointing, he said, never failed.
This next one from him tells you where all this is coming from, and he boasts here about supposedly doing evil.
He claimed he gave magical abortions by pointing at the womb and commanding the pregnancy to end.
That tells you where this is coming from. Satan is not just a liar. As John 8:44 tells us, the devil is also a murderer and has been one from the beginning. Here's another of Sanders' supposed famous abilities.
One of Sanders' more famous alleged cures concerned his daughter, Janice, who was born in dry labor with her left foot twisted backwards. Doctors said nothing could be done until the child was in her teens. Sanders received an impression from a familiar spirit demon posing as Michael to take olive oil, warm it, and anoint Janice's foot. Sanders did so, then simply twisted Janice's foot straight. The foot remained corrected. Janice walked normally, except for a slight limp in cold, damp weather.
Well, that's not really getting healed then, is it? When God does miracles, the outcome is perfect. Give me a break. And that was supposed to be one of his most famous ones, whatever. Here is some of Sanders' history starting at the age of 21.
He worked as an analytical chemist at a laboratory in Manchester, where he met and married a 19-year-old co-worker, Doreen, when he was 21. They had two children, Paul and Janice, but the marriage rapidly disintegrated. Doreen took the children and left Sanders when he was 26. Sanders then entered a long period of drifting from one low-level job to another, drinking and indulging in sexual flings with both men and women, according to his account of his life.
Then he decided to really ramp up his witchcraft.
He decided to follow the left-hand path and use magic to bring him wealth and power.
Let's talk about that a bit, and we'll probably get into it more in our study of Satanism.
In Western esotericism, the left-hand path and the right-hand path are the dichotomy between two opposing approaches to magic, witchcraft.
That's why that Baphomet has one of its hands going in different directions. One is on the so-called left-hand path, and the other is on the right-hand path. Here is how they break that down.
In some definitions, the left-hand path is equated with malicious black magic or black shamanism, while the right-hand path is equated with benevolent white magic.
Excuse me? It's all coming from the same beast and it's all bad. So, Sanders went to so-called black magic, the left-hand path, to get power. And on top of what he or she is already doing, a person that goes the left-hand path is rejecting the status quo of everything, including embracing all that goes against the norm of morally honorable and correct behavior. Left-hand paths do the exact opposite of anything virtuous and they purposely do so. They believe that performing taboo behaviors, the opposite of what is right, like killing when God says not to kill and committing adultery against God's decree, will give them more power. That's a left-hand path person.
They often question religious or moral dogma, instead adhering to forms of personal anarchism. They often embrace sexuality and incorporate it into magical ritual.
That left-hand path was originated in the West by this lady, who we saw in our study, New Age and the Last Days Deception. From a family with wealth, after traveling around the world, Madame Blavatsky founded the Theosophical Society. She went to Asia, which we already saw had a lot of witchcraft. Likewise, she traveled to India and Tibet where they too had much witchcraft and other occult practices. This talks about where she got the information and how she Americanized it.
The Western use of the terms left-hand path and right-hand path originated with Madame Blavatsky, a 19th-century occultist who founded the Theosophical Society. She had traveled across parts of southern Asia and claimed to have met with many mystics and magical practitioners in India and Tibet. She developed the term left-hand path as a translation of the term Vamakara, an Indian tantric practice that emphasized the breaking of Hindu societal taboos.
So, left-hand paths do the opposite of societal norms and, like Balyante did with Gardner's Book of Shadows, Blavatsky cleaned up the information for public consumption. Then, like Buckland Americanizing Wicca witchcraft, Blavatsky revamped and introduced those South Asian occult practices to America.
Tantric practice emphasized the breaking of Hindu societal taboos by having sexual intercourse in ritual, drinking alcohol, eating meat, and assembling in graveyards, as a part of the spiritual practice. The term Vamachara literally meant the left-hand way in Sanskrit, and it was from this that Blavatsky first coined the term.
Blavatsky bringing that witchcraft to America was one of the many reasons it spread quickly across the country, and her method was one of the many aspects of witchcraft that Alex Sanders got involved with. His early influences were through coaching from his grandmother, the Book of Shadows and its Gardnerian Wicca, and Blavatsky's left-hand path. And he was still not done, as we will see. But all of his efforts developed into a unique branch of Wicca that is still going on today, Alexandrian Wicca. Sanders also admitted that he worshipped the devil. But wait. Stop right there. You will often hear those involved in Wicca claim they do not worship Satan. There is a misnomer that the horned god has to be Satan, and I'll give them that. We will eventually see who this horned god is, but that said, make no mistake that the Wicca practice of witchcraft, any other occult practice, and any practice that falls outside and contradicts the Bible, is inspired by Satan. That is the first point. Second, there are people involved in witchcraft and Wicca witchcraft, who outright admit to worshipping Satan. And I am going to show you that in a minute, because Wicca will often claim they have nothing to do with Satan and only worship Mother Earth, the goddess of nature. But that is not what they are worshipping in the spiritual world that includes demons and Satan. Before I get into that proof, I want to mention something else that Sanders was into. Again, this guy was picking up all kinds of evil practices for his own religion. Another area he explored was the Book of the Sacred Magic of Abramelin the Mage.
The Book of Abramelin tells the story of an Egyptian. They were steeped in occult witchcraft, mage named Abraham, or Abramelin, who taught a system of magic to a Jewish guy in Germany, presumed to have lived from c.1362 to c.1458. The system of magic from this book regained popularity in the 19th and 20th centuries.
So, Alex Sanders also got involved in this aspect. The book is written more like a novel or autobiography and describes this guy, Abraham, going from Germany to Egypt, where he learned occult techniques and brought them back home. Here is a description of the book, and remember that their guardian angel is really just another demon.
The text describes an elaborate ritual whose purpose is to obtain the knowledge and conversation of the magician's guardian angel. After the preparatory phase has been successfully completed, the magician's holy guardian angel will appear and reveal magical secrets.
Of course, an angel from God is not going to do that, so it tells you what you're dealing with, a demon. But that's what's in this book.
Once this is accomplished, the magician must evoke the 12 kings and dukes of hell, Lucifer, Satan, Leviathan, Belial, etc., and bind them.
Have fun with that. You're the one that's now bound to this satanic stuff. So, Sanders got into that, and it is going to get even worse as we trace more of his history.
He apparently attracted people who supported him financially. He formed his first coven, began getting media attention, attracted more followers, and by 1965, claimed to have 1,623 initiates in 100 covens who then persuaded him to be elected king of the witches.
The media helped him get to those numbers and ran with him being labeled king of all witches. And, boy, did his ego get a huge welcome boost from that.
He claimed to create a flesh and blood spiritual baby.
What is that? Well, this idea takes us back to our study, Scientology and the occult teachings of L. Ron Hubbard. We got into the occult practice of sex magic that Hubbard and Jack Parsons were practicing. But let's get back to Sanders.
He claimed to create a flesh and blood spiritual baby in a rite of ritual masturbation, with the help of a male assistant.
So, that was what those guys were doing. What is sex magic, which is sometimes spelled magic? It's basically using sexual arousal in your demonic ritual practices because they believe that state will facilitate more power. So, Sanders also got into that. And where did he take it to from there? To the same guy we keep seeing pop onto the scene spreading evil, Aleister Crowley. Again, according to the secular media and embraced by Crowley himself, he is called the evilest man that ever lived. Only God knows who the evilest man has been, but Crowley is the one who popularized sex magic in the Western world. Crowley is credited with taking sex magic and turning it into something that can achieve results through a set formula. For those involved, certain sexual acts, combined with specific rituals, will supposedly produce power to do particular things. I'm not going to give you the list of the different so-called sexual acts because they're abominations. But we will probably get into some of this perverse stuff in more detail with Satanism. Even the modern-day Satanic Bible, written by Anton LaVey, has these same sexual rituals to perform for people to start connecting with Satanism, as a way to gain power. But that mindset of sex magic comes from Crowley and, as I said, it was also something Scientology's L. Ron Hubbard was into. Hubbard wasn't just involved in sex magic. He also worked with a lady named Marjorie Cameron and Jack Parsons, who was the inventor of rockets and founder of JPL Laboratories. Those three were doing a ritual called Babylon Working, where, through sex magic involving whatever they were doing with Marjorie Cameron and rituals, they were attempting to bring the Antichrist into our reality. It sounds crazy, but that kind of practice was something else this Sanders guy got involved with. So, now, let's go back to that supposed flesh and blood baby that Sanders claimed to make appear through sex magic rituals. And by the way, does any of this sound like something we ever want to get involved with? Does it seem healthy enough to teach to your 7-year-old grandson? These are some sick debaucherous activities. Yet how is Wicca portrayed through our media? They make it sound wonderful with wholesome people worshipping nature in another form of acceptable spiritualism. No. This is deeply satanic, and seeing the behavior it leads to, it's no wonder God says Wicca witchcraft is detestable and evil in his eyes. We are to stay away from it.
Sanders said the baby disappeared shortly after its creation, and grew up as a spirit, demon, that took him over in his trance channeling. Michael, as the spirit was called, supposedly was responsible for forcing Sanders to carry on at wild parties, insult others, and otherwise act abominably. Eventually, Sanders claimed Michael became a valuable spirit familiar, offering advice in healing matters. Sanders also channeled a familiar entity, demon, Nick Demdike, who said he had been persecuted as a witch in the Lancaster trials of the 17th century.
Apparently, Sanders was possessed by multiple demons in his life. Despite that, he married this lady.
In the 1960s, Sanders met Maxine Morris, a Roman Catholic and 20 years his junior, whom he initiated into the craft in 1964. Maxine became his high priestess. In 1968, they married.
Again, part of the reason Sanders' witchcraft took off in popularity was because he got favorable press. Unfortunately, the media has huge power to help anyone that'd like to get his or her message out, whether good, bad, or really ugly. And this stuff Sanders was into was ugly with a capital U.
Sanders was catapulted into the national public spotlight by a sensational newspaper article in 1969. The publicity led to a romanticized biography, King of the Witches, and a film, Legend of the Witches.
Now, I'm not going to give you the transcript of that entire movie because it's an hour long, but I will give you a couple of minutes so you can get an idea of what was in this film. Again, it came out in 1969 and it's Sanders' own documentary. Read this and then tell me who this guy really worships.
Narrator. In the beginning was the moon, Diana, sad, silent, alone, she wandered, the waves, her sighs, and the tears of solitude. She searched everywhere for a companion but found only reflections of herself. Lonely, Diana desired a lover. That desire became the dawn. And from the dawn came the sun, Lucifer, the god of light. Alex Sanders. Hail Lucifer, from the abodes of night. Pour forth thy store of praise. I lowly bend before thee. I adore thee to the end. With loving sacrifice, thy shrine adorned. My lips are to thy feet. My prayer, upon the rising incense smoke, upborne. Then descend to aid me. Without thee, I'm lonely and forlorn. Narrator. It must be noted that, in this ceremony, Lucifer is not the devil, but the bringer of light. Bring light into darkness, O Lord.
So much for the idea that Wiccans don't worship Satan. That's as blunt as you can get. If you were to watch the actual movie, you would notice how spiritual their music makes their practices seem. But the whole thing is sick, heavy-duty, occult witchcraft practices, and Sanders was pledging his allegiance to Lucifer. After that movie came out in 1969, Sanders' popularity really took off like a rocket. And as I said, he was hugely helped along by our secular media.
Sanders was given numerous appearances on media talk shows and public speaking engagements. Sanders enjoyed the publicity and was adept at exploiting it.
Now, if you are rightly thinking that the media's whole promotion of his witchcraft is crazy, here is a factor I want to bring up to explain some of the reason why this promotion happened. Again, his movie came out in 1969 after something significant changed in 1968. Movies needing approval from the Motion Picture Production Code was done away with. If you're not familiar with this history of Hollywood and the media, that code was in force from 1934 to 1968. When movie pictures first came out, they were extremely graphic, lewd, and even pornographic. They called it the Roaring 1920s for a reason. It was an immoral time. It got so bad that folks banded together to create this motion picture production code that censored rotten content, and it put a stop to the problem. Afterward, we got what people called the heyday for films with those like the Ten Commandments that promoted the Bible. I'm not saying they were biblically accurate, but it's not like what we have today with outright New Age, witchcraft, and other occult material. Again, this was still in effect all the way up until 1968. During that time, the heyday of Hollywood, when you could actually watch a movie with your kids in the room and not flinch at some of the content, here are those aspects that you could not have in a movie: no profanity, no mention of God, Lord, or Jesus Christ without it being in the proper biblical context, no curse words, no nudity of any kind, even in a silhouette form, no illegal drug trafficking, no sexual perversion, no sex hygiene, no venereal diseases, you couldn't even show the actual birth of a child and not even in silhouette, and you couldn't ridicule the clergy. They made it mandatory to portray certain things correctly, like the US flag. And they had to honor the country. But these days, that moral discretion is all gone. The movies also could not portray deviant or dangerous behavior as if they were promoting it. They also could not show anyone how to do things like theft, robbery, safecracking, or dynamiting of trains, mines, and buildings. They didn't want people to replicate those things. Today our media even shows us how to get away with the perfect crime and how to kill people step by step. Before 1968, movies could not show brutality, gruesomeness, a technique of committing murder by any method, and they could not give sympathy to criminals. Do you remember when the good guy always won? Movies had to have a positive attitude toward public characters and institutions, as well as not glamorize sedition, inciting the public. Boy, is that needed today. Movies could not show cruelty to animals or children, women selling their virtue, rape or attempted rape, first night scenes, a man and woman in bed together, or seduction of girls. You had to honor the institution of marriage, couldn't portray drugs in a positive light, had to have a positive portrayal of law enforcement and law enforcement officers, and there was no excessive kissing. All that sounds antiquated today, but it kept a lid on a lot of attempts to break down the walls of decent morality. Here's the point, what came out in movies all changed in 1968 when we abandoned the picture production code where movies had to submit their scripts and be under threat of not having their film released if they violated sound principles. The switch they made at that time was to the rating system we deal with today. It's not by chance that happened in 1968 and Sanders' film, glamorizing Luciferian witchcraft, came out the very next year. The restraint was lifted, and it's been downhill ever since. And while we are on the subject, I have to give a swift kick to Hollywood.
The name, Hollywood, was carefully chosen as the name for the newly established motion picture industry in the 1920s. In ancient witchcraft, the most powerful wood for a witch or wizard to make a magic wand with was from the holly tree. Thus, the most powerful magicians always used the Hollywood magic wand. And one of the things that they used the wand made of Hollywood for was to mesmerize people.
And Hollywood is still doing that today, including mesmerizing people to think witchcraft and other occult practices are desirable. But getting back to Sanders, he was a flamboyant guy who always appeared in robes while everyone else was naked. He said he did so to let people know who the leader was. And here is no shocker, Alex Sanders was a con artist. He passed off the writings of others, like Gardner, Valiente, and other occultists, as his own. He was just picking and choosing other people's work to present as his own. He was a liar, which makes sense because he was following the ultimate liar, Satan.
Sanders died on April 30, 1988, after a long battle with lung cancer. His funeral was a media event. Witches and pagans from various traditions attended to pay their respects.
And that launched Alexandrian Wicca, which is practiced in many countries today, and many people might never have been introduced to witchcraft if not for Alex Sanders. Hey, if you thought King Manasseh was bad, do you think this guy is in trouble? I don't know what he did with his last breath, but I hope he got right with God through Jesus. However, understanding his life, that possibility is not looking good. Now, that brings us up to modern-day Wicca and the major promoter of it now. Laurie Cabot was born in 1933, is still alive today at 87 years old, and continues doing her unfortunate deeds. She has come up with a couple of her own different branches of witchcraft, including the Cabot tradition.
She's a witch, author, artist, businesswoman, civil rights watchdog for helping witches be accepted, and founder of two traditions of contemporary witchcraft. She is known as the official Witch of Salem in Salem, Massachusetts.
Speaking of Salem, let's quickly deal with the witch trials. Non-Christians have often falsely criticized Christians because we supposedly committed those horrible atrocities during the Crusades. However, first of all, I wasn't there, I didn't do that. Second, those were not Christians. They were Catholics under direction of the popes. And I'm not defending that behavior because it was wrong, so I don't need to even respond to that. And you should not accuse me of it. Not accusing me of it should also apply to the Salem witch trials. How many of us Christians have heard this accusation thrown in our faces, you Christians are a bunch of dangerous hypocrites. You killed all those women at the time of the witch trials. Well, first, two wrongs don't make a right. Now, that barbarity really did happen, and I'm not going to defend it because what happened was unthinkable. And let me give you a couple of reasons why that happened, with hundreds of people arrested, imprisoned, tried, and found guilty of practicing witchcraft. 19 of them were hanged, one was crushed under heavy stones, and 5 more died in prison. So, it was bad. But is that something God condones? No. Why? Those people convicting the witches and carrying out those death sentences made 2 mistakes. First, the witches were tried in court during this Christian age with a New Testament, a new covenant of grace. Those handing out the punishment for the convicted witches were applying the Old Testament standard that is not applicable for this past 2,000 years of the Christian church age. For their wrong sentencing, the courts went back to Old Testament passages like Exodus 22 and Leviticus 20.
Thou shalt not suffer a witch to live. A man or woman that hath a familiar spirit, demon, or that is a wizard, shall surely be put to death. They shall stone them with stones, their blood shall be upon them.
So, the people in that day cited Bible verses like those as the reason to give the death penalty to some of the convicted witches. But, if that were the true way to handle it, then why does Acts 19 show Paul not doing the same? We saw this earlier when Paul was ministering to Ephesus and caused the new Christians, who had been occult people, to burn their expensive witchcraft books and confess their sinful deeds. Instead of stoning them according to the Old Testament, what did Paul do? He welcomed them when they confessed and repented of their sins. Why? Because today and throughout the New Covenant under the New Testament, we do not kill witches, we witness to them. That does not mean we condone occult behavior. But we do want to witness to them. The New Testament has another example of the New Covenant as it is applied to witchcraft. That is a passage we already discussed in this book, Acts 8, with Simon the sorcerer, who was not stoned by Peter but only rebuked. If we are still supposed to kill witches, as the Old Testament prescribes under the Old Covenant, then why didn't Paul, or Peter, do that? It is because the death penalty was Old Testament civil law. However, God's moral law with the Ten Commandments is in force for all time with its prescriptions for a certain moral character. But the civil, priestly, and dietary laws are for the Jewish nation, not the Christian church. So, those people passing out the sentences at the witch trials made a mistake. They misapplied Old Testament passages to say they were applicable for the church age. And that is a whole other can of worms, with religions today still attempting to enforce that outdated Old Testament covenant that does not apply to Christians. They try to bring those laws into today with all their legalism, and they cite the Bible as their proof text. But, again, that is the Old Covenant, which is not for us Christians today. And to use a modern term, the other issue in the Salem witch trial days was that those people were suffering because of fake news. They created an ongoing hysteria, and the evidence became just hearsay, one person's word against another. People got worked up into a frenzy. Is that how we are to move forward on issues that come up? No. It is about the rule of law and not gossip, slander, and hearsay. If we are going to pursue anything, let alone something involving prison and the death penalty, we need to make sure we have the facts right, because people are innocent until proven guilty. Instead, back in that day, they ran with fake news, and, boy, isn't that applicable for us today, especially the hysteria it constantly fuels? Here's my point: I'm not going to defend the Salem witch trials, and I don't need to. You cannot throw that in my face because I didn't do that, don't condone it, and will admit it was wrong. However, that does not mean that witchcraft is honorable, acceptable, or a positive influence and lifestyle for people to follow. And I have the right to speak up against that. In fact, in love, I am commanded by God to witness to them, so they can, hopefully, get out of witchcraft. Do you see the difference? So, we Christians need not shy away from the Crusades accusation or the Salem witch trials. I will say this though, because it does still happen today: if witches do kill people, what do? We take them to courts of law, just like any other murderer, and we deal with it according to the law. Now, let's get back to Lori Cabot. Still to this day, in her 80s, Cabot is famous for dressing in all black garments and makeup, as well as wearing her pentagram, or pentacle. She claims to come from a long line of witches, supposedly even as far back as 4,000 years ago, which would put the first witch in her family at around the time of Babylon. I don't know if that's true or not, but either way it sounds like she has a long line of unfortunate witchcraft in her family. In 1933, she was born as an only child in Wewoka, Oklahoma. Just as Buckland got into witchcraft as a young boy through his naked grandmother doing the witch thing in the kitchen, Cabot also started very young. She was 6 years old. Her father was a science-oriented man, who did not believe in the devil. That science influenced her to do some tweaking of the witchcraft message, Just like Balliente made Gardner's Book of Shadows more poetic and palatable, or how Buckland Americanized it to not be so ritualistic and demanding of followers. Cabot is the one who is responsible for trying to paint witchcraft as a science. So, she set out to make it more sciency and less occultish. That's the same tactic employed by Hinduism when they first tried evangelizing the West. Hinduism tried to come over here with that approach in the late 1890s, but at that time America rejected their yoga and meditation. We still had a pervasive Christian mindset at that time, so Hindu beliefs and practices could not gain ground. But they re-strategized and came back at us again later. This time they got people involved by claiming their religion was a science. People meditating and practicing yoga were hooked to monitors that confirmed how these Hindu rituals lower brain waves, heart rate, and stress level. Hey, that may be true, but it is still a false and dangerous Hindu practice. So, Cabot did the same science makeover with witchcraft through the help of her dad's science. Still at a young age, three witches performed Cabot's witchcraft initiation ceremony. As this explains, she had met them through the media of that day, the library.
When she was 16, the witches initiated her in a profoundly transformational experience. She was anointed with oil and dubbed with a sword. She took the sword, impaled it in the earth, and said, "I return to earth my wisdom and I call myself witch."
After that was when Cabot branched out to create her witchcraft science angle. She married twice but both failed. After her second divorce, she took her daughters and moved away.
She made a vow that she would live her life totally as a witch. She would wear nothing but traditional witch clothing, which she says is long black robes, wear her pentacle displayed, and would emulate the goddess by outlining her eyes in black makeup, according, she says, to an ancient tradition.
I can't prove this, but what she claimed got me thinking as far back as Egypt and how their artwork often depicted people having major black lines or coloring around the eyes. And we know their background with the occult. I don't know if that's where Cabot got it, but it could be. Of course, telling ladies they should not wear black makeup is getting into unneeded legalism. I'm just saying that was very interesting. So, Cabot was big on black and, even today, witches generally wear a lot of black makeup and clothing. Why is that? Well, this is according to Cabot and is basically what other witches believe.
Black absorbs light while white reflects it. This absorption of light facilitates psychic power. To further augment power, practitioners wear gold jewelry for psychic strength, usually in the form of a pentacle pendant.
Here is more on Cabot trying to make witchcraft into a science.
In 1955, Cabot founded the Cabot tradition of the science of witchcraft, originally called witchcraft as a science. In addition to witchcraft basics and history, instruction includes parapsychology, physiology, astrology, geometric structure, sociology, anthropology, meditation, aura reading, balancing and healing, the use of crystals, and the psychic arts.
Now, what does that sound like? It's just a big old pile of New Age. If you've seen our study on the New Age movement, you know that belief system is a hodgepodge of diverse practices, including many that are from the occult. Recruiting efforts for both witchcraft and New Age stay away from freaking people out by accidentally admitting that they are occultists, who create their own spiritual reality and worship Lucifer. Instead, with New Age, they attempt to project that they are all about some wonderful enlightening New Age for man. It is the same with Wicca. People are told it is just a nature science to alleviate stress and have a happy life. And for women, they like to claim it is so much better than living with those mean and awful men. We will get more into that in the next chapter on the subject of feminism. Cabot also follows what is called the Wiccan Reed, which tells a witch that he or she should do all they would like but harm none. Turn to someone, or your pet, and snicker with your hand over your mouth. With all due respect, that's serious hypocrisy. As we initially put this study out from the pulpit, we were informed that witches were tuning in and getting on their witch chat boards, working together to try putting curses and hexes on us for informing Christians about occult witchcraft. Yet, they supposedly follow a creed that tells them to harm none? I think we all see the duplicity there. In fact, here is another example from a British news show recently where the lady actually demonstrates how to get rid of somebody, which again brings up the question about what happened to not harming others. Here is the transcript.
Caption: The witch who wants you to live your best life. Female interviewer: You were about 17, weren't you, and it was through a friend, who was doing Reiki to begin with, that you had this conversation, you got into that. But how did that lead to you becoming a witch? Semra Haksever, full-time witch. I think that just kind of opened the path, like my spiritual path, And like just all the people I met through doing that back then, and all the years, and all the synchronicities, and all the crazy people, I don't know, incidents that happened in my life have really led me to where I'm now. Female interviewer. So this isn't like, sort of, witches on broomsticks with cats. Hey Sever. No. Female interviewer. This is very different stuff. So, what type of witch are you? Hey Sever. I call myself an eclectic witch. So, I take, you know, different little bits of magic from all over the place. And it's all about self-empowerment and doing rituals to help you manifest, connect to the moon, and make you feel really good about yourself. Female interviewer. So, you have cast spells where they've been so powerful that the result has been brilliant, right? Hey Sever. Yeah, amazing? The most recent one that was crazy was that I manifested a holiday. I did a spell for a holiday. It was a little spell with a bay leaf and a sacred symbol, and I got a free 2-week holiday to Bali, all expenses paid. Female interviewer. And you're going to show us some of these now, aren't you? Male interviewer reads a viewer's question for the Hake Sever. Have you got a spell to get rid of people? Male interviewer. Lacey said she's like to get rid of her lazy husband. They show a picture of the lazy husband sleeping on the couch. Hake Sever. She needs to make some black salt. Male interviewer. So, he's gone to sleep, and he has things to do. So, what would she do? She needs a shoe for this, doesn't she? Hake Sever. She needs some black salt, and she can write it down and just rub the black salt all over the paper because it's powerful stuff. Hake Sever shows a small jar of black paste. Hake Sever. This is black salt. So, it's a mix of burnt sage, which is really great for protection, and old charcoal from spells that I've used. So, if you are making spells, you can have the charcoal and salt. And so, what you would do is just take a little pinch of it, like that, pop it in there, a bowl, and then if you want it to work fast you can use cayenne pepper. Pepper speeds it up, makes things happen really fast. So, you pop a little pinch in there like that. And then what you do is you pop it into the pestle and mortar, like that. And then you can blend it. If you're blending stuff, to make something go away you mix counterclockwise. If you want stuff to come in, you go clockwise. So, you can just do a blend. Male interviewer. What about the shoes? Hake Sever. Put this concoction in the tip of the shoes. Make their shoes face the front door and then put a pinch in each, in the tip. Female interviewer. And then in 7 days that lazy guy will be gone? Hake Sever. Yeah, and it works fast.
Where do you even start with this? First, when did we get rid of standards for demonstrations on television? They are showing witchcraft techniques as a life hack. They are actually presenting it as a way to improve your life and they are outright glamorizing it. And what really blew me away was how television programs like that one are showing step by step, occult witchcraft rituals that we can do at home. And if you watch that entire show, they demonstrated a bunch of other concoctions and spells. I just gave you the one example. And did you catch that tagline at the very beginning? They introduced her as a witch that just wants to show you how to live your best life. Who else does that sound like? That's what Mr. Joel Osteen pitches with his messages all about self, self-empowerment, and self, along with more self. As we have seen multiple times now, what's the number one law of Satanism? It is, do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law. That came from Aleister Crowley and that selfism is satanic. So, why is that witch doing her witchcraft? It is because she thinks that will help her live her best life now and it's all about her. Again, the philosophy is, it's all about me. And believe it or not, even Osteen's wife admits their form of worship is all about self and not God. But that's flat-out Satanism, folks. Here's what Osteen said.
Commentator. Attention, all Christians. When you go to church next Sunday, you might not be doing it for God, but to satisfy your own selfish needs. Can you believe that? That is what some people are saying. At least, that's how people are interpreting the remarks that were made by popular Lakewood Church co-pastor, Victoria Osteen. Check this out. Victoria Osteen talking to a stadium-sized crowd of followers. I just want to encourage every one of us to realize, when we obey God, we're not doing it for God. I mean, that is one way to look at it,
we're doing it for ourselves because God takes pleasure when we're happy. That's the thing that gives him the greatest joy this morning. So, I want you to know this morning, just do good for your own self. Do good because God wants you to be happy. When you come to church, when you worship him, you're not doing it for God, really, you're doing it for yourself because that's what makes God happy. Amen. Video switches to a group of Satanists seated in a circle. Narrator. Founded in San Francisco, California, by Anton LaVey in 1966, the Church of Satan sees belief in God or hell as delusional. And so, they choose to practice self-reliance and self-worship. Interviewer questioning priestess Lilith Sinclair of the Temple of Set. If a Christian said to you, "You're just really worshipping yourself," what would you say? Sinclair. In a sense, they would be right. It is a form of self-worship. Interviewer questioning ex-Satanist, Mike Lehan. You were a Satanist for how long? Lehan. 12 years. Interviewer. What does it mean to be a Satanist and to have Satan as a god? Lehan. To adore Satan. You're serving Satan. You're serving self. More than anything else, it's egocentric, self-centered, serve me, always me, immediate gratification. That's all it's about. Magus Peter H. Gilmore, High Priest, Church of Satan. The Church of Satan has chosen Satan as its primary symbol because, in Hebrew, it means adversary, opposer, one to accuse or question. We see ourselves as being the Satans, the adversaries, opposers, and accusers of all spiritual belief systems that would try to hamper enjoyment of our life as a human being. Anton Zandor LaVey, Church of Satan founder. This is a very selfish religion. We believe in greed. We believe in selfishness. We believe in all of the lustful thoughts that motivate man because this is man's natural feeling.
I had to share that because people might think I'm crazy to say that is Satanism. Well, there you heard it straight from the Satanists' mouths. When your belief is that life is all about self, that's Satanism, and now it's even in the church. And it follows that witchcraft, which also comes from Satan, is also all about self, just as Austin preaches self-enhancement, self-improvement, and whatever focuses on self. Now, let's get back to Lori Cabot, who taught continuing education classes at Salem State College for 7 years. Hey, I thought we weren't supposed to have any religions or Christianity taught in schools. That's what they tell us. Apparently, witchcraft is okay, and you can even have a practicing witch teach it. Cabot also opened up a couple witchcraft shops in Salem that were called The Witch Shop and Crow Haven Corner. The latter was extremely successful as a tourist attraction. In the 1970s, she gave her shop to her daughter to run. Then in 1973 she began an annual tradition called Witch's Costume Ball, which is a costume party that still goes on today, celebrating Samhain, or All Hallows' Eve, Halloween, one of their prominent high, unholy days in Salem. That ball attracts a growing international community, and part of the reason is all the unfortunate media attention they get. I'm sure many of us remember this guy, Michael Dukakis, who ran for U.S. president in 1988, was the governor of Massachusetts in 1977 when he signed a citation making Cabot the official witch of Salem. Is that a good thing for him to promote? What party is he a part of? Again, it's the Democrats.
In 1986, she founded the Witches League of Public Awareness to serve as a media watchdog and civil rights advocate for witchcraft.
Right after that, the U.S. saw witchcraft begin to greatly increase in the public view. Wicca also became a religion around the same time.
In 1986, Wicca was recognized as an official religion in the United States through the court case Detmer v. Landon. In the case, incarcerated Wiccan Herbert Daniel Detmer was refused ritual objects used for worship. The Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled that Wicca was entitled to First Amendment protection like any other religion.
I wonder if they have to wear COVID masks when they gather, as Christian churches have been made to, just saying.
In 1998, a Wiccan student in Texas enlisted the aid of the ACLU after the school board tried to prevent her from wearing Wiccan jewelry and black clothes. The board reversed its view. In 2004, the Indiana Civil Liberties Union fought to reverse a judge's decision that divorcing Wiccans were not allowed to teach their faith to their sons. In 2005, U.S. Army Sergeant Patrick D. Stewart became the first Wiccan serving in the U.S. military to die in combat. His family was refused a Wiccan pentacle on his gravestone. As a result of a court case initiated by the Americans United for the Separation of Church and State, Wiccan symbols are now accepted by the Veterans Administration.
All that launched an increase in practicing U.S. Wiccans that has led to the number today being in the millions. And part of it was Lori Cabot taking it on as a civil rights issue. She even ran for Salem mayor in 1987 after people made derogatory comments about witches. She was kind of like a watchdog for witchcraft. Before that, in 1980, Cabot served as a board member for the Salem Chamber of Commerce. So, she got involved in the schools, businesses, and politics. Cabot is still alive and active today. She also found a way to act as some sort of a so-called pastor.
In 1988, she established the Temple of Isis, a chapter of the National Alliance of Pantheists. Through the National Alliance of Pantheists, she was ordained Reverend Cabot and may perform legal marriages. Cabot's books include Practical Magic, A Salem Witch's Handbook, 1986, The Power of the Witch, with Tom Cowan, 1990, Love Magic, with Tom Cowan, 1992, Celebrate the Earth, A Year of Holidays in the Pagan Tradition, with Jean Candles 49 Mills and Karen Bagnard, 1994, and The Witch in Every Woman, Reawakening the Magical Nature of the Feminine to Heal, Protect, Create, and Empower, with Jean Mills, 1997.
She's all about feminine power and certainly doesn't like using the term, mankind. She likes to use humankind. Maybe that is more baggage from her unfortunate history involving contentious run-ins with men in her life, which doesn't mean all guys are bad, but that's where she went.
Cabot maintains a full schedule of teaching classes, giving readings and making public appearances. She is active in community work, including a tree planting program for the Salem area.
Of course, the tree planting involves being out there in nature and worshiping the creation instead of the creator. Here's the point of understanding Lori Cabot's experience. Unfortunately, she's still going on today, having a huge hand in recruiting people to think that witchcraft is just a science and an alternate way, a life hack. She wants you to try different aspects of witchcraft and, if those don't work for you, try something else that witchcraft offers because it's supposedly going to help you. It's all about yourself. But the reality is that those getting involved are taking on a demonic, satanic, Luciferian practice. This is why we need to witness to people, including this lady, who is still alive at 87. She can still come to Christ. You might be thinking she's too far gone, but we are not to write anyone off. My heart's cry is not just to gain knowledge about witchcraft, which is all over the Bible. As a Bible church, we study it because God wants us to learn all of His Word, not just pick and choose for ourselves. Our focus in studying this, or any of the other studies in our series, World Religions, Cults and the Occult, is to get equipped so we can feel confident enough to reach anybody for Christ, especially those trapped on this dark path. And Jesus can save them like He did with this lady in a video transcript called, The Story of a Former Witch.
Former witch, Sheila. I think I wanted to have power over the things that scared me. I thought that it would give me that. Narrator. Growing up, Shalom was known as Sheila. As a teen, she began searching for truth. Her fascination with the occult and her love for nature led her to Wicca. Sheila. I was always very much in love with nature, and so it was a natural thing to worship nature. So, it was easy for me to get into that. Narrator. As Sheila became more involved with Wicca, she became very outspoken about the religion. She felt it was her duty to let the world know that witches were nothing like the normal perception. Sheila. You know, I thought of myself as a good witch, kind of like Glinda. But that's kind of the way I looked at it for myself. Narrator.
Despite thinking she was a good witch, Sheila began to delve deeper into the occult lifestyle.
Drinking, drugs, and sex became a way of life. Sheila. I didn't believe in sin. You know, that opens the door pretty easily for you to get into just about anything you want to. Narrator.
Even though Sheila practiced magic and attended pagan gatherings, she still felt hopeless. At 25, the man she was engaged to marry walked away from her after his family learned she was a witch. Devastated and alone, she turned to her magic, hoping to find peace.
Sheila.
And I just thought, well, you know, I'm not really in harmony with nature enough yet.
Narrator. Sheila searched everywhere for answers. She spent time worshipping her favorite tree, doing spells, and appealing to the god and goddess for answers.
Sheila. I really thought I was on the right track. I thought I was really getting somewhere. I thought I was becoming enlightened. But things were still a mess.
Narrator. A few years later, another man came into her life, Kevin. Before long, the two fell in love and decided to marry. But just like before, his family found out she was a witch and wanted the relationship to end.
Sheila.
So I was really angry that, once again, Christians had interfered with my love life. So, I decided I'd have a little talk with Jesus because I still believed that Jesus had existed, that he was, you know, a really smart guy.
I said, look, you know, I'm really suffering here, so I need your help. You're supposed to be the Prince of Peace, I need some peace here. And it was really strange because I actually experienced peace at that point.
Narrator. She began reading the Bible and studying Christianity.
She wanted to understand the peace and power that came over her after she had prayed.
Sheila.
I had so many viewpoints that had to change, that it was a process.
I mean, I literally felt like scales were being dropped from my eyes, like Paul's experience.
Narrator.
Sheila and Kevin got back together and began studying the Bible and going to church. The couple gave their lives to Jesus and soon married, this time with the blessing of his family.
Sheila.
The first thing that I felt was, boy, what a lot of wasted time, that I could have been happy, and I could have been sober, that I could have been worshipping the right God.
Narrator.
Now, her duty has changed a little. She no longer seeks to educate the world about who witches really are, but instead who Christ is.
Sheila.
After practicing magic for over 20 years, I never encountered any power like what I've encountered since I've been a Christian.
Narrator.
With the peace she's always longed for, Shalom is hoping to help other pagans and Wiccans find it, too.
Sheila. You can find forgiveness. It does not matter what you've been into. It does not matter what you've done. He's gonna still forgive all of that, and there's hope, there is hope.
Amen. That's why we're studying what we're studying. It's not just in case we get on Jeopardy, and the Daily Double involves the witchcraft category with some question like, who founded Wicca? This time of getting equipped is for sharing the information with unfortunate souls who have been duped into the occult and its witchcraft. And if you are reading this book and are currently any part of witchcraft, or were in years past, listen to that lady. What she is testifying to is true. There is hope. The one that you are or were worshipping is false, and it will destroy you. But Jesus Christ can forgive you, give you hope, and make you whole. And I know there's a dark hole in your heart that your witchcraft and occult practices are not filling. It is a God-shaped void that only God can fill. That starts when you call upon the name of Jesus Christ. Wherever you are, if that's you, do that tonight. Now, speaking of bad relationships and awful men, as well as female goddess worship that is pushed on our ladies through Wicca, in the next chapter we'll talk about Dianic Wicca. Besides the introduction to that topic in this book, Lord willing, eventually, we will have a lengthy study of feminism and how it's just a smokescreen to get women of all ages into straight-up witchcraft.